Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Today's guest is Henry Palmer, the founder and CEO of Locktree, an online retail store founded in 2020 that sells zero waste and eco-friendly consumer products. Locktree's mission is to create greater access to eco-friendly alternatives, making sustainable living simple. Henry, welcome to Right Here in Mass. Thank you for joining us as this week's guest. Please share more about you and what you do.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here and chat about Locktree and sort of our journey. You really sort of captured kind of the high level of what we do. We're interested in sustainability and, you know, how do we think about the impact that we have on the world as consumers and how can we reduce that impact and so on. What our main goal is to go out and source and curate a fantastic selection of eco-friendly, sustainable, zero-waste products and bring them together. So it makes it really simple for consumers to come shop, find, learn about, you know, discover new products, and then have those shipped directly to them, knowing that it's, you know, done so in the most sort of eco-friendly way possible. I think one of the really neat pieces is, you know, oftentimes people, they might know about one product or they're interested in something, and then that sort of discovery process is so cool along the way. They might come to Locktree for one thing and discover something else along the way, and all of a sudden they've helped make another change in their lives that can really, yeah, reduce that impact.
Absolutely. Tell me about your career before Locktree. Was there something happened that kind of ignited your interest in sustainability and therefore encouraged you to start something like Locktree? I'd love to hear more about where you've been up till this point.
Yeah. It's where to begin. Basically the environment is something I've always cared a tremendous amount. I was very fortunate to sort of have a childhood, you know, spending a lot of time outdoors and so on. And just sort of, my mother used to, she grew an enormous vegetable garden. I remember my first job was as a four-year-old. I was selling vegetables and things like that. So I've always had this sort of tie back to the environment, something that is, you know, been important to me. I follow this through. It's always just something, you know, being outdoors, camping, you know, fishing, all these things were just something that was important to me. And then I went through university. I actually went off and did a few years being a full-time athlete rowing back in the UK, where my family is originally from. So again, spending tons of time outdoors and, you know, really just being exposed to, the environment and all that there. Ended up landing back in Boston. And then in 2011, I went to work for a phenomenal company called Wild Idea Buffalo Company, which I was introduced to, which was working on restoring the grasslands of the Great Plains by putting indigenous species back on the land. Founder of that company is a gentleman named Dan O'Brien. And it was just the perfect tie-in with things that I cared about and my interests and the right time of my life. Small company, and I sort of dove right in, and I worked a lot on their marketing and their direct to consumer sales. And it was just a fascinating project to work on because I got to touch a lot of different things in the business and learn about different pieces. But with this concept of, you know, we are, the company sells buffalo meat, but the idea was that let's take this indigenous species and put them back on the land, leave them alone, and then all of a sudden you're going to restore the environment. You put the keystone species back on the prairie, and all of a sudden you have all the other animals start to return because the grasses grow back, and this is wonderful, wonderful impact on the environment. So this really gave me a sort of wonderful education on the concept that a business, you know, you can run a business and you can do well by doing good. And that really kind of stuck with me as to, is really sort of a founding mission that in life that, you know, as we think about opportunities and career opportunities, that I wanted to pursue things that, you know, did well by doing good in the world. But what was interesting to me about Wild Idea Buffalo was one of the things that we were trying to tackle was how do we create greater access to, you know, a healthy meat product that was 100% grass-fed, 100% hormone-free, you know, free-roaming, all this. But the question was, you know, how do we reach consumers and make it easy for them? I was there for about 5 or 6 years, finished there, and then went back and did my MBA at Northeastern. And while I was doing that, I was just chewing on this idea of sustainability and access and how do we make it easier for consumers? And that kind of stayed with me. And I was thinking through my life and the choices that I make around the home and ways that I could reduce our footprint. And I was thinking there has to be an easier way. And that would kind of became the genesis of the idea of Luxury was, let's just make this easy for people.
Yeah.
So I know that's a very long-winded explanation.
No, that's amazing to hear about how your previous career is really what ignited your passion for sustainability, in addition to growing up with a garden when you were young and always being around the environment and things like that. With being able to launch Locktree, what you've ultimately done is provide convenience for people. And so now you're removing the research on their end of having to say, okay, what are the sustainable options for this product that I'm looking to buy and use? And you're also supporting the companies by being able to perhaps expand their brand awareness for people who might not have known about it before. So I think it's really beneficial for both parties that you're serving and supporting.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with that, tell me a little bit more about the marketplace in terms of the businesses that are on it. Do you go out and reach out to them and tell them a lot about Locktree? Do they have to apply to ultimately be on the marketplace? Maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, it's been a bit of both, to be honest. And, you know, one of the first things I sort of thought about was, you know, very kind of self-centeredly thinking through my life. And I first need to back up and, you know, I believe that we're going through a very interesting period, I think awareness-wise and culturally, people are becoming much more aware of our environmental impact and the need to make changes. So you have this kind of increased awareness. And with that, obviously, you start to have increased demand. So I started kind of thinking through my life and what are the various sort of verticals where I might, you know, be purchasing products and thinking about what that might be. So thinking about the kitchen and what goes there, or the bathroom, or like the laundry room. And as I sort of started to explore, I was like, okay, well, let's take the bathroom. What are the various things in the bathroom that we could do differently that make an impact? So you could take a look at like a shampoo bottle. Now, shampoo bottle is really interesting because it's a plastic bottle. About 90% of your shampoo is just water. So you have a plastic bottle, which we throw away about 500 million of them every year in America. But then we have this tremendous carbon footprint of transporting this water around. So shampoo bars are like an awesome way to reduce waste because it just gets rid of both that carbon footprint and a plastic bottle. So that's a great swap. And with a business, I started to think through what are those items and then kind of go to the next item. And then as far as bringing products on at Locktree, I would go out and research and test and examine different products and sort of start to fill those verticals. And then as we've grown now, more and more brands approach us and we can think about that curation piece. You know, one of the bits that I'm interested in is really understanding all the products, really kind of whether it's their packaging, whether it's their ingredients, whether it's, you know, the brand's mission, what, you know, the kind of nuts and bolts of that and bringing that together. We're never going to be a company that wants to carry every single shampoo bar out there or every right. single this, right? We want to carry the right ones and we want to carry the ones that, you know, we believe in that are making a difference and doing it correctly. So that's sort of how I've thought through it. And as we've grown, we've added more products and we've thought, you know, deeper into that into that equation, if you would.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting, just the fact that you went literally room by room and pointed out the everyday necessities that you're using all the time and saying, how can I substitute this for something that might be more eco-friendly, which just helped to spur that list of ideas from there.
That's right.
The part that you mentioned about really being careful about the products that you're listing on the website and not listing every single product within that category is something I want to touch about a little bit further. With that, do you ever get potential companies that come to you and say, oh, well, I'm a shampoo bar and you already have 20 shampoo bars on the website. Why would I want to be listed next to my competitor? What's something that you kind of have like a counter argument to that for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I mean, for me, it's really balanced. I think that on one side, you have a lot of products that are sort of complements of one another. Easy example would be like a conditioner bar next to a shampoo bar, right? Like those are obviously very complementary products. As far as competitive products, I think that there's certainly room for different variants, different versions. So I'll give you an example. We have a couple different products in the sort of our laundry space that focus on helping reducing microfiber waste. Now, microfibers are a terrifying, terrifying area of pollution. And so for us, the big drive is to help encourage people to try and do something about it. And therefore we have a few different options that, can help tackle the microfiber crisis, and then work for consumers. And for me, a big, big piece with sustainability and all this, and I think part of it, again, is this sort of cultural shift and this sort of rebranding. Sustainability cannot be synonymous with sacrifice. We can't ask consumers to say, hey, let's make this swap or let's do this differently, and then their experience is worse off, right? And if you have let's go to a different product, like a toothpaste, and you go to like a toothpaste app and say, hey, let's switch over to this, and you can reduce all those toothpaste tubes and so on. Great. But if it doesn't work, then all of a sudden, the customer is not going to carry on with it. But also it's left, and no pun intended, left a bad taste in their mouth, yeah, and they're less likely to try the next thing. So, it's really important to kind of set people up for success. And I believe that, again, we've had this shift. For the longest time, sustainability was really thought in binary terms. Mm-hmm. You either were or you weren't. And I don't believe that. I believe there's kind of what I might refer to as sustainablish. People are on a path and people can start to make some changes in their lives and find things that work really well for them. And that really makes an impact. A lot of littles make a big. And I would rather 100 people all make one change than one person make 100 changes. Because all of a sudden you have, if you've made a swap and it's worked for you and you're excited about that product and actually it hasn't been a sacrifice, but rather it's been maybe an upgrade in your life, more convenient, you're that much more likely to try something else. And you've like discovered that there's a different way to think about this. And now you're off and running. And I'll give you a really sort of silly example. If you go to like back to something like a shampoo bar, it reduces all the water. Great. But all of a sudden now traveling is so much easier because you can take it with you because you're not going to go through security and have your shampoo bottle taken away. And it's like this added benefit that people, and then all of a sudden they're like, wow, that's interesting. Wait, we have the same characteristics with something like laundry detergent. They've done the same thing. Those are laundry sheets. They don't have water. I can actually take some detergent with me if I'm traveling. So if I want to do this, so there's all these like extra benefits that start to occur. And I think if we find a way to find great products and encourage people to try the thing that they're interested in and have it be a success for them, they're that much more likely to continue down the path and make the next change and then the next change. And that's how we really make an impact and a difference in the environment.
I think those are a few interesting points that you made there, with one being there's a difference between turning something into a sustainable option, it, just to say it's sustainable, compared to doing it right and having it something that having it be something that actually works for people and is something that's easy for them to maintain. And also along with that, as you mentioned, the idea of having 100 people doing one sustainable change compared to one person doing 100 sustainable changes because of the longevity. Sometimes it's really hard to be able to keep up with all of these changes if you're trying to almost burn yourself out doing too many at once. But if you just kind of start small and get comfortable with it, it makes it that much easier to scale up from there.
That's right. I mean, a great, another sort of great parallel for this, and because we're there right now, is the new year and resolutions and people saying like, I'm gonna start going to the gym, right? And like, if you show up on the first day and you know, the first week, and you just go like all out, the likelihood is you're not going to carry on with it. And what is that? What is the day? Is it like January 22nd that most people give up on their New Year's resolution? It's just like they don't make it. Whereas, you know, if your resolution was, I'm going to go to the gym and spend like 5 minutes or whatever and do a few exercises or 15 minutes and start to build into it, then all of a sudden it becomes a habit. Then it becomes something that we're interested in. And that's where you start to see the difference. And if, again, if your like goal is to get fit, it takes time. It's, you know, and it's step by step. And I believe that, you know, sustainability follows a similar track where let's take it step by step. Let's, you know, make it something that people can carry on with, and let's make it something that people are excited about. That's how I think about it.
Absolutely. And right now you're doing a lot of products. Do you currently work with sustainable-based services, or is that something that you might be working on in the future, perhaps partnering with different service providers?
Sort of yes and no, to be honest. On one level, so we are partnering with 1% of the Planet, which we're hugely excited about. So that basically 1% of all of our revenue goes to helping support other environmental projects. So that's kind of how I'd answer that we're working with that. We also work with a few other groups helping planting trees and so on. So that's kind of how we're thinking on a service level at this stage.
Awesome. And what Henry and I were talking about earlier before we started recording this episode is that I found him in Locktree through Sustainable Business Network, which is ultimately an organization for Massachusetts specifically, the chapter that I found, that helps to kind of bring sustainable focused businesses together. So I imagine that that organization has helped you to meet different companies that have then gone onto the marketplace. Is that correct?
That's right. And I think it's, you know, I'm a big fan of communities and, you know, what we can do, I think, is whether it's as entrepreneurs or small businesses or whatever it might be, to help continue to build those networks and discover new ideas, discover new products, discover new, you know, new ways of thinking about, you know, various challenges. You know, one of the things that I've really tried to do with Locktree as I built the business is, you know, I have quite a few ideas and beliefs of how we should do it and how we should build it, but I certainly don't have all the answers. And I think the networks like that are fantastic because you get to meet people, you get to talk to other brands, and you get to sort of all of a sudden look at things differently and say, hey, that's really interesting. Maybe that's something that A is a product that could work for us, which is awesome. And of course, you know, where we can on a local level, we'd love to do that. Support local brands, but then also from just a nuts and bolts business opportunity, you know, learn from others and see what they're doing and take it from there.
Definitely. And especially with what it seems like so much new research and data constantly coming out about sustainability and best practices, I imagine it's helpful to have other experts like yourself within the field to bounce ideas off of and learn from and things like that.
For me, one of the things that I think is really important also is getting out there and hearing what the questions are. And that's been something that has been hugely helpful to us as a business. So we spend a lot of time also investing in our blog and things like that, because education is really important. We need to teach people about sustainability. And I think, sadly, there's still a large number of sort of cynical corporations that do a fair bit of greenwashing. We can sort of go down a rabbit hole discussing that, but that leave consumers confused about, you know, is this good for the environment? Is this not good for the environment? So one of the efforts that we've made is to try and do that education piece, to try and, build out a blog, but getting involved with the community and hearing what those questions are and what topics are on people's mind, that really helps lead us to be like, oh, that's something that we need to explore, or that's something that we need to address. Because if you have a question, the chances are, a dozen other people have that same question, and we should, try and answer that and try and help, help support that as best we can.
Right. And I love that you do that, because with my marketing clients, that's one thing I always say to them. Anytime someone asks you a question or brings something up that they're struggling with, write that down, because that topic can be used to create content and provide education and support to these people in the future.
Absolutely.
With LockTree launching in 2020, did the pandemic kind of give you inspiration or motivation to launch it during that time? Or would you say that timing was just coincidental?
It was super interesting, actually. I mean, it was something that I had been building this business, and something that I've been chewing on, and was something that I wanted to do. And what we saw even just before the pandemic, was all of a sudden this wave of different kind of news and events and things occurring that I think brought our whole awareness level up that much more. So we started with, anything back to sort of 2019, there were just absolutely massive and tragic wildfires all over the world, but particularly in like Australia and in the West Coast here, just at enormous levels. So that was happening, and that was creating a lot of news. Simultaneously, the name Greta Thunberg became a household name. She came on the scene, and we started to see huge, huge climate rallies, building awareness there. So these things started to kind of build, and then all of a sudden we had the pandemic, and people, obviously there was sort of lockdown, and people came back to their homes. And I think in many ways, that started to drive awareness even more, because now people are in their homes, they're looking around at the things they're doing on a daily basis, and asking some of those questions: is there a better way to do this? Do I need to use cling film to wrap up my leftovers, or could I use something like a beeswrap? Things like that. We did see a big uptick of, I think, interest in it during the sort of pandemic, and when people kind of came back to their homes. And I think some of it was also, while the pandemic was obviously a world health situation, it also dovetailed into people thinking about the environment and the impact on the world in general, and that sort of how vulnerable the environment is in many ways. I think it exposed a lot of vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. So, from a business perspective, we were just getting going. So obviously you wouldn't, if you had a choice, you wouldn't say, let's start a business in the midst of a world crisis. But, we sort of carried on and really focused on, the education piece, the content creation, and building. And one of the things that I'm particularly interested in LockTree is building a brand, a durable, sustainable brand for the future. So, this is not for me, it's a mission of not building a company really quickly and trying to grow it, overnight. It's about making a difference and making an impact. So step by step by step. So yes, it was, a challenging couple of years, but my view and the goal for the business is much longer than that. So, we just carry on and we adapt and we make some changes. The other thing, the last thing I'll say about it is it did change the way consumers were shopping. People were shopping online a lot more. So that was, and people were already very comfortable, the majority of people were already very comfortable with e-commerce, but now everyone's shopping with e-commerce. So that was there was a benefit there for sure.
Absolutely. And I think that's so interesting, the point that you brought up about with people spending more time at home, they're really starting to analyze how they spend that time at home and what they're using while they're at home. And that's something that I saw with some of my clients as well. Some of my interior design clients, their work just skyrocketed because people would be like, wow, I really hate my living room and how it looks. Yeah. And so it's just interesting that especially with something like Locktree really kind of helped to gain more popularity and traction with the fact of what was just going on simply in the world.
Exactly.
And one of the things that you've mentioned a few times, which is, of course, what Locktree is the fact that it's a platform and building a brand and focusing on ultimately this collective. And so with all of this tech that you've been using to build Locktree, like what was just that process like of building this platform and marketplace from someone who might be interested in doing this themselves with the tech space?
Yeah, I mean, so I was very fortunate for my first company to kind of have a sort of on the ground education with e-commerce and that piece. And I think that one of the things that's wonderful about e-commerce for anyone who's interested is it is hugely accessible. You have very, very low cost to entry. You can start a website and you can start it very cheaply and very quickly. It has different challenges. So the alternative would be a brick and mortar store, and you can open a brick and mortar store on the high street, and that's going to have a lot of overhead costs and fixed costs to get going, but you're going to have natural foot traffic immediately because you have a physical place that people are coming by. Mm-hmm. When you start a website, you don't have natural, you're just on another website. You don't have that immediate traffic. So you have to think about how do you drive that traffic and what makes your website different and what makes that special and your, you know, unique selling proposition and all of that. So I think that's a really important thing to think about with entrepreneurs that want to get into e-commerce is, okay, sure, it's easy to set it up and turn it on if you would, but then what's next and how do you build that interest and how do you build a brand around that? For me, it really has been about trying to authentically connect with customers. I want people to understand that when they come to Locktree, that there are real people on the other end of this and that people that really care about making a difference in the world. And that's where I think the education piece comes in, the blogging piece, the content. And when you place an order on our website, I hope that you have an experience that really feels like that somebody who's spent the time, you know, examining these products, you know, detailed product descriptions, all of that. And then all the way through to how we ship the packages, thinking about the carbon offsetting that we do, thinking about the packaging materials, all of that has to feel like it's a complete unit and then sort of ties in with the brand. So for people that are interested in e-commerce, it's a fantastic, fantastic place. There's tremendous opportunities. You can take your unique idea, you can find your niche, and you can connect with those people. You just have to think about how do you reach them, and then how do you create that experience? Because it's not a physical experience. You know, they're gonna come and shop the website, and they have to feel like it's somewhere they want to buy from.
Absolutely. And as a marketer, I love that you keep bringing up the topics of content and community. As you're building Locktree, how do you also ultimately hold the hat and wear the hat of marketer and be able to dedicate the time to creating all this content, which you've done so well with being able to do that?
Yeah, I think that it's, marketing for me and, you know, you as the expert, you know, you can speak more clearly to this, but it's always a forward investment, right? You create content and you cannot expect it to have an impact today. We put a blog article up and we put it up. Our reasons for it, for creating this content is primarily education, but it does make an impact on sales, but it's not going to make an impact on sales today or tomorrow. Right. But if you keep doing this and you keep building an authentic brand and you keep thinking through these steps, it's the type of work that in 6 months' time, you're pleased you've been doing. Again, it's a bit like, back to our analogy of the gym, you're not going to see results tomorrow, but in 6 months' time, you'll be really pleased you've been doing that. And so that's kind of how I've thought about it is this is something that, helping educate consumers is something that we're passionate about and we believe is important. So we're going to do it. And then we can take that and then we can share that content and we can share that on social media and, you know, we can distribute that through our mailing list and so on. So that's kind of how we've thought about and approached it.
I love that. And it reminds me of the analogy that I always like to share, which is that marketing and sales is often like being a parent and asking your child to do something. It's like you have to ask them 5, 6, 7, 8 times to do it before they actually take that action, which is exactly what you just shared. With the content that you create, it might not necessarily bring some type of return right away, but knowing that you're planting those seeds and nurturing it over time, you know that you're making a difference and that's leading you up to long-term success.
Yeah, 100%.
With Locktree, is this something that you do full-time or do you also have another career that you do with it?
Yeah, no, it's something that I committed to doing full-time. So it's funny you use the parenting analogy. I do have 2 small children. So when I started Locktree, I also became a school teacher. I became a wannabe like assistant to my children's education while they were at home. So I was doing that and taking care of those 2 monsters. I found it to be more than 5 times I had to ask them to do things, but we got there eventually. I did that. And then after that, really went full time on Locktree just to try and, try and build this and grow this.
Amazing. And with that, do you have like a certain routine that you follow each day? Like what does your typical day look like at Locktree?
So my days start early. I typically get up at like 5-ish. And I'm someone who I try and get up before everybody else. Again, small children, they're monsters and all that. I get up. I usually tend to emails and things like that. Things that are just, mm-hmm. Really quick ones. I usually, start with a cup of coffee and address, maybe it's 6 emails that were there. And then kind of get on to my morning routine of working out, checking out my chickens in the backyard, things like this, feeding the animals and doing all that piece. Then all of a sudden the rest of the household wakes up getting the kids' lunches ready, wife off, she heads off to work and all that. Then everyone's out the house and I can go off to work and, tackle working on things at Locktree. So that's how my day starts. What I try and think about is really being almost as regimented as possible of here are the buckets of tasks that I need to deal with and kind of going through that. And it's obviously evolved as we've gone and, we have new needs coming up, whether it's, shipping and we have to take care of that and address, how that's done. But then that kind of the day sort of progresses like that. I'm fortunate enough to then, I usually sort of pause for a few hours in the afternoon and go back to managing and tackling children, which I love and is I'm very fortunate to do. But then it starts back up again in the evening and later at night, addressing emails, addressing, outstanding tasks and so on. I think that it's starting a business, being an entrepreneur, it is it's a full-time piece. It's not a
right.
You can't, it's weekends, it's mornings, it's always on your mind. I work a lot on the weekends. Oftentimes we will go to events and things like that. So that's great. But there's also just times where there's something on my mind and, we need to tackle or something I want to address. And it might be a Sunday afternoon. You just sit down and, and work on it, while you watch some TV and maybe, or while you do something yep. else, or, you're in between things. Maybe you've just been shuttling kids to, a soccer game or a swim meet or whatever it is. And you have this like dead time. You're like, well, I can actually make this phone call. I can work on that. So yeah, I try and keep my days pretty structured. They definitely start early. But then it is, it's a full-time piece where it's always on my mind.
Right. And I think that's part of the beauty of entrepreneurship is having the option to have that structure, but also have that flexibility when you need it and really be able to adapt your work schedule and your workload with what works for you and what you really need to be prioritizing the most?
I think, again, you know, we're seeing some really interesting shifts. And of course, the pandemic, you know, did this too, where people are realizing, I mean, you and I are having this meeting virtually, and it's how well does that work, right? You can have meetings from wherever. And all of a sudden, the world has realized that you can do these things remotely and you can be incredibly efficient. And maybe it makes more sense for you to, you know, have your own space in your home where you can set up with your morning coffee and be there in a couple of minutes and tackling things rather than have a half hour commute. And actually now you've just saved yourself, you know, 25 minutes because it only took you five to get your coffee and you sat down at your desk and now you're here. So I think that that's really nice. And I believe that people are starting to consider that work-life balance more, and how we do that and then how that kind of plays on things. And we're much more productive. We can be much more productive as a result. So I think that has been an interesting shift in how people are operating.
Yeah, I fully agree, especially with now a lot of companies are shifting to the 4-day work week. And I was just reading an article this morning that was a study or research that showed that people, once they experienced the 4-day work week, they said they would never go back to 5 days unless they had a significant pay increase with that. And it just made me realize that exactly like you said, being able to shift that schedule really does do a lot for being able to meet your lifestyle needs, but also ensure that you have that work-life balance and be able to do what works best for your situation.
Well, it's about, you know, and I was very fortunate, or, you know, good and bad, maybe. I grew up, my father worked for himself. My father was a designer, a furniture designer. And, you know, for him, it was a creative project. And it was not about the hours in the day. You know, it was about the input or output that he could create, you know, during those hours. So, you know, showing up, sitting at a desk for 12 hours is only great if you're getting work done, right? Mm-hmm. But I would, you know, I'd far rather have a shorter work week or shorter whatever it is and get and be efficient with it, not just, you know, have the show of, oh, I sat here or did this for X amount of hours. It's about what we can create, the output we can do. And then again, when we talk about working remotely, whether you're down at Cape Cod in the summer, like at the beach, or you're somewhere else in an office or whatever, but are you able to execute on the tasks that have to, you know, have to get done? That's the end measure, right? Where you were, it really doesn't have that much of an impact on it. And then of course that ties back into, for those interested in e-commerce, e-commerce is something you can do, you know, very, very remotely.
Absolutely. Shifting gears a little bit, and I'm sure you have tons of recommendations for this, given what you do, but what would you say your favorite local businesses are to support?
Yeah, so, that's a really good question.
Have too many.
No. I mean, I'm going to pull it really back to kind of some of my interests. I'm a big fan of sort of farm to table and fresh food and all this. There's a wonderful company called Alfresco. They're doing a local company. They're doing meal kits, sort of Boston local, and, you know, fresh vegetables, fresh food and deliver. And that is, you know, that's really cool. I'm a big fan of, again, like when you go to those farmers markets and you go to those things and, you know, meeting the producers and everything, that's a great, great piece. And then another thing that's always close to my heart, I'm a big coffee drinker. I love coffee and books, and I have children, and there's a wonderful bookstore and coffee shop called the Blue Bunny over in Dedham. And that's a great local find. So those would be my two, just off the top of my head, of kind of where I am and things that I've done recently that I would share with people.
Love it. Henry, this has been such an awesome episode, and I've really enjoyed learning more about you and your journey with Locktree and what led you to that point. And now I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Yeah, absolutely. So come visit us at www.locktree.com, and that's LOCHTREE. So locktree.com, and you'll find us, and yeah, check us out, explore our products, explore our blog, sign up for our newsletter. And this has been fantastic to connect and discuss everything we're doing and discuss sustainability, e-commerce, Massachusetts and marketing, small businesses, the whole thing. This has been such a pleasure. So thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. And I'll be sure to link to all of those places you mentioned in our show notes in case our listeners would like to click through there. But thank you so much again for coming on.
Of course, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.